Great Plays. The National Broadcasting Company presents as today's offering in the Great Plays series, The Antigone of Sophocles, in a new English version by the American writers Dudley Fitz and Robert Fitzgerald. This particular play is the third in the great trilogy dealing with the story of Oedipus.
What's that you're listening to, Dad?
NBC is about to start a radio performance of the Antigone of Sophocles.
So what?
It's a Greek play written about 2,500 years ago. Sophocles wrote three plays around the terrible legend of Oedipus, and this is the last of the three. You know the story of Oedipus, don't you, son?
Well, yes, Dad, I think so. Wasn't he the king of Thebes who was condemned by the fates to murder his own father and then marry his own mother?
That's right.
Yes, and then when he discovered what he had done, he tore out his eyes and went into voluntary exile to Athens with his two daughters.
The two daughters were Antigone and Ismene. And this play we're about to hear concerns their lives after the death of Oedipus and their return to Thebes. The Antigone is one of the greatest of Greek plays.
Well, you can have it. I don't care for Greek plays in any form, great or small. They're dull.
I remember when you said that Shakespeare was dull.
Yes, but I learned to like him. Oh, that's different.
Not at all, son. You learn to like Shakespeare when you learn to understand his dramatic methods. The same thing is true of a Greek play. In those days, the form of drama was entirely different from that of today.
Yes, I know, Dad. The Greek chorus and all that.
Exactly. Incidentally, the Greek chorus of Sophocles' time survived as the prologues and epilogues in the time of Shakespeare and the Elizabethan drama. And it might interest you to know that modern radio narrators perform about the same function today as the chorus does in the Greek play.
See, that's an interesting point. Well, tell me some more about the Antigone before it starts.
Well, let's see. As well as I can remember, just before the action begins, the two brothers of Antigone have fought and killed each other for the throne of Thebes. Later, the same night, Creon, their uncle, takes over the vacant throne and issues several decrees, one of which motivates the play.
Well, what about the play itself, Dad?
Listen, it's starting.
The Antigone of Sophocles begins just before sunrise outside the palace of Creon. This is the highest point overlooking the wide plain in which the city lies and the fast-flowing river Dirce. The principal characters are Antigone and her sister Ismene, Creon, the new king, a talkative sentry, the king's son, Haman, who is to marry Antigone, a famous old blind prophet, Tiresias, and the nameless, reflective voices of the citizens who appear in every Greek play as the chorus. In the religion of these Greek people, a dead man must be buried or at least sprinkled symbolically with earth, or else his soul is condemned to wander forever and never to rejoin the souls of his family in the next world under the earth. Pale light of dawn, Antigone and Ismene come face to face before the gate of Creon's palace.
Ismene, dear sister, you would think that we had already suffered enough for the curse of Oedipus. I cannot imagine any grief that you and I have not gone through, and now. Have they told you the latest decree of our King Creon?
I have heard nothing. I know that two sisters lost two brothers, a double death in a single hour. And I know that the Argive army fled in the night. But beyond this, nothing.
I thought so. And that is why I wanted you to come out here with me. There is something we must do.
Why do you speak so strangely?
Listen, Ismene. Creon buried our brother, Eteocles, with military honors, gave him a soldier's funeral, and it was right that he should. But Polynices, who fought as bravely and died as miserably, they say that Creon has sworn no one shall bury him, no one mourn for him, but his body must lie in the fields. That is what they say. And our good Creon is coming here to announce it publicly, and the penalty, stoning to death in the public square. There it is. And now you can prove what you are, a true sister or a traitor to your family.
Poor Antigone. But what can I do about it?
You must decide whether you will help me or not.
Well, I don't understand you. Help you in what?
Ismene, I am going to bury him. Will you come?
Bury him? You've just said the new law forbids it.
He is my brother, and he is your brother, too.
But think of the danger. Think what Creon will do.
Creon is not strong enough to stand in my way.
Sister. Oedipus died, everyone hating him for what his own search brought to light. His eyes ripped out by his own hand. Jocaste died, his mother and wife at once. She twisted the cords that strangled her life. And our two brothers died, each killed by the other's sword. And we are left. But, oh, Antigone, think how much more terrible than these our own death would be if we should go against Creon and do what he's forbidden. We're only women. We cannot fight with men, Antigone. The law is strong. We must give in to the law in this thing and in worse. I beg the dead to forgive me, but I'm helpless. I must yield to those in authority, and I think it's dangerous business to be always meddling.
If that is what you think, I should not want you, even if you asked to come. You have made your choice. You can be what you want to be. But I will bury him. And if I must die, I say that this crime is holy. I shall lie down with him in death, and I shall be as dear to him as he to me. You may do as you like, since apparently the laws of the gods mean nothing to you.
They mean a great deal to me, but I have no strength to break laws that were made for the public good.
That must be your excuse, I suppose. But as for me, I will bury the brother I love.
Antigone, I'm so afraid for you.
You need not be. You have yourself to consider, after all.
No one must hear of this. You must tell no one. I will keep it a secret, I promise.
Oh, tell it. Tell everyone. Think how they'll hate you when it all comes out, if they learn that you knew all about it all the time.
You're so on fire with a plan so ghastly cold.
Perhaps. But I am doing only what I must.
But can you do it? I say that you cannot.
Very well. When my strength comes out, I shall do no more.
Impossible things should not be attempted at all.
Go away, Ismene. I shall be hating you soon, and the dead will too, for your words are hateful. Leave me my foolish plan. I am not afraid of the danger. If it means death, it will not be the worst of deaths. Death without honor.
Go then. You feel that you must. But always remember that all our thoughts for you are thoughts of love.
Now the long blade of the sun, lying level east to west, touches with glory Thebes of the Seven Gates. Open, unlidded eye of golden day. O marching light across the eddy and rush of Dirce's stream, striking the white shields of the enemy thrown headlong backward from the blaze of morning.
Polynices, their commander, rouse them with windy phrases. He, the wild eagle, screaming insults above our land. His wings, their shields of snow. His crest, their marshaled helms.
He was thrown back, and as he turned, great Thebes, no tender victim for his noisy power, rose like a dragon behind him, shouting war.
For God hates utterly the bray of bragging tongues. And when he beheld their smiling, their swagger of golden helms, The frown of his thunder blasted their first men from our walls.
And others storming in fury no less than his found shock of death in the dusty joy of battle.
Seven captains at seven gates yielded their clanging arms to the god that bends the battle line and breaks it. These two only, brothers in blood, face to face in matchless rage, mirroring each the other's death, clashed in long combat.
But now, in the beautiful morning of victory, let Thebes of the many chariots sing for joy. With hearts for dancing, we'll take leave of war. Our temple shall be sweet with hymns of praise, and the long night shall echo with our chorus.
But now at last our new king is coming, Creon of Thebes, Menoikas' son. In this auspicious dawn of his reign, what are the new complexities that shifting fate has woven for him? What is his counsel? Why has he summoned the old men to hear him?
Gentlemen, I have the honor to inform you that our ship of state, which recent storms have threatened to destroy, has come safely to harbor at last, guided by the merciful wisdom of heaven. I have summoned you here this morning because I know that I can depend upon you. You never hesitated in your duty to our late ruler, Oedipus. And when Oedipus died, your loyalty was transferred to his children. Unfortunately, as you know, his two sons, the princes Eteocles and Polynices, have killed each other in battle. And I, as the next in blood, have succeeded to the full power of the throne. I am aware, of course, that no ruler can expect complete loyalty from his subjects until he has been tested in office. Nevertheless, I say to you at the very outset that I have nothing but contempt for the kind of governor who is afraid, for whatever reason, to follow the course that he knows is best for the state. I call God to witness that if I saw my country headed for ruin, I should not be afraid to speak out plainly. And I need hardly remind you, I would never have any dealings with an enemy of the people. These are my principles at any rate, and that is why I have made the following decision concerning the sons of Oedipus. Eteocles, who died as a man should die, fighting for his country, is to be buried with full military honors, with all the ceremony that is usual when the greatest heroes die. But his brother Polynices, who broke his exile to come back with fire and sword against his native city and the shrines of his father's gods, whose one idea was to spill the blood of his blood and sell his own people into slavery. Polynices, I say, is to have no burial. No man is to touch him or say the least prayer for him. He shall lie on the plain unburied, and the birds and the scavenging dogs can do with him whatever they like. This is my command. As long as I am king, no traitor is going to be honored with a loyal man. But whoever shows by word and deed that he is on the side of the state, he shall have my respect while he is living and my reverence when he is dead.
If that is your will, Creon, son of Menoikas, you have the right to enforce it. We are yours.
That is my will. Take care that you do your part.
We are old men.
You will give no support to whoever breaks this law.
Only a crazy man is in love with death.
And death it is. Yet money talks, and the wisest have sometimes been known to count a few coins too many.
I'll not say that I'm out of breath from running, King, because every time I stopped to think about what I have to tell you, I felt like going back. And all the time a voice kept saying, "You fool! Don't you know you're walking straight into trouble?"
and then another voice. Yes, but if you let somebody else get the news to Creon first, it will be even worse than that for you. But good sense won out. At least I hope it was good sense. And here I am with a story that makes no sense at all. But I'll tell it anyhow, because as they say, what's going to happen's going to happen, and...
Come to the point. What have you to say?
I did not do it. I did not see who did it. You must not punish me for what someone else has done.
A comprehensive defense, more effective perhaps if I knew its purpose. Come, what is it?
A dreadful thing. I don't know how to put it.
Out with it.
Well, then, the dead man, Polynices, out there, someone, well, there is new dust on the slimy flesh. Someone has given it burial that way and gone.
And the man who dared do this?
I swear I do not know. You must believe me. Listen. The ground was dry. Not a sign of digging. No, not a wheel track in the dust. No trace of anyone. It was when they relieved us this morning, and one of them, the corporal, pointed to it. There it was. The strangest. Look, the body just mounded over with light dust, you see. Not buried, really, but as if they'd covered it just enough for the ghost's peace. And no sign of dogs or any wild animal that had been there. I swear by all the gods, it was not I. I do not know who it was, but it was not I. So here I am, no happier to be here than you are to have me. Nobody likes the man who brings bad news.
I have been wondering, King, can it be that the gods have done this?
Stop!
Doddering wrecks go out of your heads entirely. The gods intolerable. The gods favor this corpse. Why? How had he served them? Is it your senile opinion that the gods love to honor bad men? A pious thought. No. From the very beginning, there have been those who have whispered together, stiff-necked anarchists putting their heads together, scheming against biennales. These are the men, and they have bribed my own guards to do this thing. Money. There's nothing in the world so demoralizing as money. But you, sentry, I swear by God and by the throne of God, the man who has done this thing shall pay for it. Find that man, bring him here to me, or your death will be the least of your problems. I'll string you up alive, and there'll be certain ways to make you discover your employer before you die. And the process may teach you a lesson you seem to have missed. The dearest profit is sometimes all too dear. That depends on the source. Do you understand me? A fortune won is often misfortune.
King, may I speak?
Your very voice distresses me.
Are you sure that it is my voice and not your conscience?
My God, he wants to analyze me now.
It is not what I say, but what has been done that hurts you.
You talk too much.
Maybe, but I've done nothing.
Sold your soul for some silver. That's all you've done.
How dreadful it is when the right judge judges wrong.
Your figures of speech may entertain you now, but unless you bring me the man, you will get little profit from them in the end.
Bring me the man. I'd like nothing better than bringing him the man. But bring him or not, you've seen the last of me here. At any rate, I'm safe.
Numberless are the world's wonders, but none more wonderful than man. The storm gray sea yields to his prows, the huge crests bear him high. Earth, holy and inexhaustible, is graven with shining furrows where his plows have gone, year after year, the timeless labor of stallions.
The light-boned birds and beasts that cling to cover, the lithe fish lighting their reaches of dim water, all are taken, tamed in the net of his mind. The lion on the hill, the wild horse windy-maned, resigned to him. and his blunt yoke has broken the sultry shoulders of the mountain bull.
Words also, and thought as rapid as air he fashions to his good use. Statecraft is his, and his the skill that deflects the arrows of snow, the spears of winter rain. From every wind he has made himself secure, from all but one. In the late wind of death he cannot stand.
O clear intelligence, force beyond all measure, O fate of man working both good and evil. When the laws are kept, how proudly his city stands. When the laws are broken, what of his city then? Never may the anarchist find rest at my hearth. Never be it said that my thoughts are his thoughts.
Princess Antigone.
A prisoner. A sentry bringing the princess.
What does this mean? Surely this captive woman is the Princess Antigone. Why should she be taken?
Here is the one who did it. We caught her in the very act of burying him.
Where is Creon?
Just coming from the house.
What has happened? Why have you come back so soon?
Oh, King. A man should never be too sure of anything. I would have sworn that you'd not see me here again. Your anger frightened me so, and the things you threatened me with. But how could I tell then that I'd be able to solve the case so soon? Here is this woman. She is the guilty one. We found her trying to bury him.
But this is Antigone. Why have you brought her here?
She was burying him, I tell you.
Is this the truth?
I saw her with my own eyes. Can I say more?
The details come. Tell me quickly.
It was like this. After those terrible threats of yours, King, we went back and brushed the dust away from the body. The flesh was soft by now and stinking. So we sat on a hill to windward and kept watch. We kept each other awake, but nothing happened until the white round sun whirled in the center of the round sky over us. Then suddenly, a storm of dust roared up from the earth and the sky went out. The plain vanished with all its trees in the stinging dark. We closed our eyes and endured it. The whirlwind lasted a long time, but it passed. And then we looked, and there was Antigone. I've seen a mother bird come back to a stripped nest, heard her crying bitterly a broken note or two for the young one stolen. Just so when this girl found the bare corpse and all her love's work wasted, she wept and cried on heaven to damn the hands that had done this thing. And then she brought more dust and sprinkled wine 3 times for her brother's ghost. We ran and took her at once. She was not afraid. She denied nothing. And this was a comfort to me and some uneasiness, for it is a good thing to escape from death, but it is no great pleasure to bring death to a friend. Yet I always say, there is nothing so comfortable as your own safe skin.
And you, Antigone, you with your head hanging, do you confess this thing?
I do. I deny nothing.
Tell me briefly. Had you heard my proclamation touching this matter?
It was public. Could I help hearing it?
And yet you dared defy the law?
I dared. Your edict, King, was strong. But all your strength is weakness itself against the immortal, unrecorded laws of God. I knew I must die, even without your decree. I am only mortal. And if I must die now, before it is my time to die, surely this is no hardship. Can anyone living as I live, with evil all about me, think death less than a friend? This death of mine is of no importance. But if I had left my brother lying in death unburied, I should have suffered. Now I do not. You smile at me. Ah, Creon, think me a fool if you like, but it may well be that a fool convicts me of folly.
Like father, like daughter, both headstrong, deaf to reason.
She has never learned to yield. She has much to learn. The inflexible heart breaks first, the toughest iron cracks first, and the wildest horses bend their necks at the pull of the smallest curb. Pride in a slave? This girl is guilty of a double insolence, breaking the given laws and boasting of it. Who is the man here? She or I, if this crime goes unpunished. My sister's child or not, she and her sister win bitter death for this. Go, some of you. Arrest his meanie. I accuse her equally. Bring her. You'll find her sniveling in the house there. Her mind's a traitor. Crimes kept in the dark cry for light. And the guardian brain shudders. But how much worse than this is brazen boasting of barefaced anarchy?
Creon, what more do you want than my death?
Nothing. That gives me everything.
Well, then I beg you, kill me. This talking is great weariness. I should have praise and honor for what I have done. All these men here would praise me were their lips not frozen shut with fear of you. Ah, the good fortune of kings licensed to say and do whatever they please.
You are alone here in that opinion.
There is no guilt in reverence for the dead.
But Eteocles, was he not your brother too?
My brother too.
And you insult his memory?
The dead man would not say that I insulted.
He would. You honor a traitor as much as him.
His own brother, traitor or not, an equal in blood.
Polynices made war on his country. Eteocles defended it.
Nevertheless, there are honors due all the dead.
But not the same for the wicked as for the just.
Oh, Creon, Creon, which of us can say what the gods hold wicked?
An enemy is an enemy, even dead.
It is my nature to join in love, not hate.
Go join them, then, if you must have your love, find it in hell.
But see, this Mimi comes. Those tears are sisterly. The cloud that shadows her eyes rains down gentle sorrow.
You too, Ismene. Snake in my ordered house, sucking my blood stealthily. And all the time I never knew that these two sisters were aiming at my throne. Ismene, do you confess your share in this crime or deny it? Answer me.
Yes, if she will let me say so, I am guilty.
No, Ismene, you have no right to say so. You would not help me, and I will not have you help me.
But now I know what you meant. And I'm here to join you, to take my share of punishment.
The dead man and the gods who rule the dead know whose act this was. Words are not friends.
Do you refuse me, Antigone? I want to die with you. I too have a duty that I must discharge to the dead.
You shall not lessen my death by sharing it.
What do I care for life when you're dead?
Ask Creon. You're always hanging on his opinion.
You're laughing at me. Why, Antigone?
It's a joyless laughter, Ismene.
But can I do nothing?
Yes. Save yourself. I shall not envy you.
We are equally guilty.
No more, Ismene. You are alive. But I belong to death.
Gentlemen, I beg you to observe these girls. One has just now lost her mind. The other has obviously never had a mind to lose.
Grief teaches the steadiest minds to waver, King.
You certainly did when you assumed the guilt with the guilty.
But how could I go on living without her?
You are. She is already dead.
But your own son's bride.
There are places enough for him to push his plow. I'll have no fanatic slut for my son's wife.
You really intend to steal this girl from your son?
No. Death will do that for me.
Then she must die?
You dazzle me. But enough of this talk. You there, take them away and guard them well, for they are but women. And even brave men run when they see death coming.
Fortunate is the man who has never tasted God's vengeance. Where once the anger of heaven has struck, that house is shaken forever.
I have seen this gathering sorrow from time long past loom upon Oedipus' children. So lately this last flower of his line drank the sunlight. But now a passionate word and a handful of dust have closed up all its beauty. What mortal arrogance transcends the wrath of Zeus?
Sleep cannot lull him, nor the effortless long months of the timeless gods. But he is young forever, and his house is the shining day of high Olympus. All that is and shall be, and all the past is his. No pride on earth is free of the curse of heaven.
The straying dreams of men may bring them ghosts of joy. But as they drowse, the waking embers burn them, or they walk with fixed eyes as blind men walk. But the ancient wisdom speaks for our own time. Fate works most for woe with folly's fairest show. Man's little pleasure is the spring of sorrow.
But here is Haman, king, the last of all your sons. Is it grief for Antigone that brings him here, and bitterness at being robbed of his bride?
We shall soon see, and no need of diviners. Son, you have heard my final judgment on that girl. Have you come here hating me, or have you come with deference and with love, whatever I do?
I am your son, father. You are my guide. You make things clear for me, and I obey you. No marriage means more to me than your continuing wisdom.
Good. That is the way to behave. Subordinate everything else, my son, to your father's will. This is what a man prays for, that he may get sons attentive and dutiful in his house, each one hating his father's enemies, honoring his father's friends. But if his sons fail him, if they turn out unprofitably, what has he fathered but trouble for himself and amusement for the malicious? So you are right not to lose your head over this woman. Your pleasure with her would soon grow cold, Haman, and then you'd have a hellcat in bed and elsewhere. Let her find her husband in hell. Of all the people in the city, only she has had contempt for my law and broken it. The woman dies. I suppose she'll plead family ties. Well, let her. If I permit my own family to rebel, how shall I earn the world's obedience? Show me the man who keeps his house in hand. He is fit for public authority. Whoever is chosen to govern should be obeyed, must be obeyed in all things great and small, just and unjust. Oh, Haman, the man who knows how to obey, and that man only knows how to give commands when the time comes. Anarchy. Anarchy. Show me a greater evil. This is why cities tumble and the great houses rain down. This is what scatters armies. No woman shall seduce us. If we must lose, let's lose to a man at least. Is a woman stronger than we?
Father, reason is God's crowning gift to man, and you are right to warn me against losing mine. I cannot say, I hope that I shall never want to say, that you have reasoned badly. Yet there are other men who can reason too, and their opinions might be helpful. I have heard them muttering and whispering in the dark about this girl. They say no woman has ever so unreasonably died so shameful a death for a generous act. She covered her brother's body. Is this indecent? She kept him from dogs and vultures. Is this a crime? Death? She should have all the honor that we can give her. This is the way they talk out there in the city. Nothing is closer to me than your happiness. What could be closer? Must not any son value his father's fortune as his father does his? I beg you, do not be unchangeable. It is not reason never to yield to reason. Forget you are angry. Let yourself be moved. I know I am young, but please let me say this. The ideal condition would be, I admit, that men should be right by instinct. But since we are all too likely to go astray, the reasonable thing is to learn from those who can teach.
You will do well to listen to him, King, if what he says is sensible. And you, Haman, must listen to your father. Both speak well.
You consider it right for a man of my years and experience to go to school to a boy?
It is not right if I am wrong. But if I am young and right, what does my age matter?
You think it's right to stand up for an anarchist?
Not at all. I pay no respects to criminals.
Then she is not a criminal?
The city would deny it to a man.
My voice is the one voice giving orders in this city.
It is no city. If it takes orders from one voice...
The state is the king.
Yes. if the state is a desert?
This boy, it seems, is sold out to a woman.
My concern is only for you.
God, your concern in a public brawl with your father.
And you? In a public brawl with justice?
With justice when all that I do is within my right.
You have no right to trample on God's right.
Fool, adolescent. Fool. Taken in by a woman.
You'll never see me taken in by anything vile.
Every word you say is for her.
And for you. And for me. And for the gods under the earth.
You'll never marry her while she lives.
Then she must die. But her death will cause another.
Another? Have you lost your senses? Is this an open threat?
There is no threat in speaking to emptiness.
My God, you'll regret this superior tone of yours, you girl-struck fool. Don't play at words with me.
I'm sorry. You prefer blank silence.
Oh, my God! I swear by all the gods in heaven above us. You'll watch it. I swear you shall. Bring her out! Bring the woman out. Let her die before his eyes.
Not here, no. She will not die here, King. Then you will never see my face again. Go on raving as long as you've a friend to endure you.
Gone. Gone. Creon. A young man in a rage is dangerous.
Let him do or dream to do more than a man can. He shall not save these girls from death.
These girls? You have sentenced them both?
No. You are right. I will not kill the one whose hands are clean.
But Antigone?
I will carry her far away out there in the wilderness and lock her living in a vault of stone. She shall have food, as the custom is, to absolve the state of her death. And there let her pray to the gods of hell. They are her only gods. Perhaps they will show her an escape from death. Or she may learn, though late, that piety shown the dead is pity in vain.
Love, unconquerable, waster of rich men, keeper of warm lights and all-night vigil in the soft face of a girl. Sea wanderer, forest visitor, even the pure immortals cannot escape you. And mortal man in his one day's dusk trembles before your glory. Surely you swerve upon ruin the just man's consenting heart, as here you have made bright anger strike between father and son, and none has conquered but love. A girl's glance working the will of heaven. Pleasure to her alone who mocks us, merciless Aphrodite.
Here is Antigone, passing to that chamber where all find sleep at last.
Look upon me, friends, and pity me. Turning back at the night's edge to say goodbye to the sun that shines for me no longer. Now sleepy death summons me down to Acheron, that cold shore. There is no bride song there, nor any music.
Yet not unpraised, not without a kind of honor, you walk at last into the underworld, untouched by sickness, broken by no sword. What woman has ever found your way to death?
How often I have heard the story of Niobe, Tantalus' wretched daughter, how the stone clung fast about her, ivy closed. Her tears are never dumb. I feel the loneliness of her death in mine.
But she was born of heaven, and you are woman, woman born. If her death is yours, a mortal woman's, is this not for you glory in our world and in the world beyond?
Oh, you laugh at me. Oh, friends, friends, can you not wait until I'm dead? Oh, thieves. Oh, men, many charioted in love with fortune. Dear springs of Dirce. Sacred Theban grove, be witnesses for me, denied all pity, unjustly judged. And think a word of love
for her whose path turns under dark earth, where there are no more tears.
You have passed beyond human daring and come at last into a place of stone where justice sits. I cannot tell what shape of your father's guilt appears in this.
Oedipus, father and brother, your marriage strikes from the grave to murder mine. All my life, the blasphemy of my birth has followed me.
Reverence is a virtue, but strength lives in established law that must prevail. You have made your choice. Your death is the doing of your conscious hand.
Well, then let me go, since all your words are bitter and the very light of the sun is cold to me. Lead me to my vigil, where I must have neither love nor lamentation, no song, but silence.
If dirges and plain lamentations could put off death, men would be singing forever. Take her, go, you know your orders. Take her to the vault and leave her alone there. And if she lives or dies, that's her affair, not ours. Our hands are clean.
O tomb, vaulted bride bed in eternal rock, soon I shall be with my own again, where Persephone welcomes the thin ghosts underground, and I shall see my father again, and you, mother, and dearest Polynices, dearest indeed to me, since it was my hand that washed him clean and poured the ritual wine, and my reward is death before my time. And yet, as men's hearts know, I have done no wrong. I have not sinned before God, or if I have, I shall know the truth in death. But if the guilt lies upon Creon, who judged me, then I pray may his punishment equal my own.
Oh, passionate heart, unyielding, tormented still by the same wind.
The gods shall have ample cause to regret their delaying.
Ah, that voice has come very close to death.
I will not deceive you by suggesting that you are mistaken.
Thebes, and you, my father's gods and rulers of Thebes, you see me now, the last unhappy daughter of a line of kings, your kings, led away to death. You will remember what things I suffer and at what men's hands, because I would not transgress the laws of heaven. Come, let us wait no longer.
All Danae's beauty was locked away in the brazen cell where the sunlight would not come. A small room, still as any grave, enclosed her. Yet she was a princess too. And Zeus, in a rain of gold, poured love upon her. Oh, child, child, no power in wealth or war or tough sea-blackened ship can prevail against untiring destiny.
And Dryas' son also. That furious king bore the gods' prisoning anger for his pride. Sealed up by Dionysus in death's stone, his madness died among echoes. So at the last he learned what dreadful power his tongue had mocked. For he had profaned the revels and fired the wrath of the nine implacable sisters that loved the sound of the flute.
This is the way the blind man comes. Princess, princess, lockstep, two heads lit by the eyes of one.
What new thing have you to tell us, old Tiresias?
I have much to tell you. Listen to the prophet Creon.
I am not aware that I have ever failed to listen. But what have you to say?
This Creon, you stand once more on the edge of fate.
What do you mean?
Listen, Creon. I was sitting in my chair of augury at the place where the birds gather about me. They were all a-chatter, as is their habit, when suddenly I heard a strange note in their jangling, a scream, a whirring fury. I knew that they were fighting, tearing each other, dying in a whirlwind of wings clashing, and I was afraid. I began the rites of burnt offering at the altar, but the fire failed me. Instead of bright flames, There was only the sputtering slime of the fat thigh flesh melting and no blaze. This was a sign from heaven. My boy described it seeing for me as I see for others. I tell you, Creon, you yourself have brought this new calamity upon us. The gods are deaf when we pray to them. The fire recoils from our offering. Ah, Creon, Creon, these are no trifles. Think, all men make mistakes, but a good man yields when he knows his course is wrong and repairs his evil. The only crime is pride. It is for your own good that I speak as I do. You should be able to yield for your own good.
Seems the prophets have made me their special province. All my life long, I have been a kind of butt for the dull arrows of doddering fortune tellers. No, Tiresias, if your birds, if the great eagles of God himself, should carry him stinking bit by bit to heaven, I would not yield. I am not afraid of pollution. No man can defile the gods. Tiresias, it is a sorry thing when a wise man sells his wisdom and lets out his words for hire.
You are sick, Creon. You are deathly sick.
As you say, it is not my place to challenge a prophet.
You are a king because of me.
You have a certain skill, but you have sold out.
King, you will drive me to words that...
Say them, say them. Speak. Whatever you say, you will not change my will.
Then take this and take it to heart. The day is not far off when you shall pay back corpse for corpse, flesh of your own flesh. You have thrust the child of this world into living night. You have kept from the gods below the child that is theirs. The one in a grave before her death, the other dead, denied the grave. This is your crime. And the furies and the dark gods of hell are swift with terrible punishment for you. Not many days, and your house will be full of men and women weeping, and curses will jostle you on every hand for sons you have kept from burial in far cities, sick with the stench of your insolence. These are my arrows, Creon. They are all for you. Come, boy, lead me home. Let him waste his fine anger upon younger men. Maybe he will learn at last to control a wiser tongue in a better head.
The old man has gone, King, but his words remain to plague us. I am old, too, but I cannot remember that he was ever false.
That is true. It troubles me. Oh, it is hard to give in. But it is worse to risk everything for stubborn pride.
Creon, take my advice.
What shall I do?
Go quickly, free Antigone from her vault, and build a tomb for the body of Polynices.
You would have me do this?
Creon, yes. And it must be done at once. God, move swiftly to cancel the folly of stubborn men.
Oh, it is hard to deny the heart. But I will do it. I will not fight with destiny.
You must go yourself. You cannot leave it.
I will go. Bring Axis, servants. Come with me to the tomb. I buried her. I will set her free. Oh, quickly. My mind misgives. The laws of the gods are mighty. And a man must serve them to the last day of his life.
God of many names.
O Iacchus, son of Cadmean Semele, O born of the thunder, guardian of the west, regent of Eleusis Plain, O prince of many Thebes and the dragon field by Ripplinus Menos.
God of many names, Iacus of Thebes, heavenly child of Semele, bride of the thunderer, the shadow of plague is upon us. Come with clement feet. Oh, come from Parnassus down the long slopes across the lamenting water.
Your fire, chorister of the throbbing stars, oh, purest among the voices of the night, thou, son of God, blaze for us.
Come with choric rapture of circling mannards who cry, O Iake!
God of many names.
Men of the line of Cadmos, you who live near Amphion Citadel, I cannot say of any condition of human life, this is fixed, this is clearly good or bad. Fate raises up and fate casts down the happy and unhappy alike. No man can foretell his fate. Take the case of Creon. Creon was happy once, as I count happiness, victorious in battle, sole governor of the land, fortunate father of children nobly born. And now it has all gone from him.
Your words hint at sorrow. What is your news for us?
They are dead. The living are guilty of their death.
Who is guilty? Who is dead? Speak.
Haemon. Haemon is dead. And the hand that killed him is his own hand.
His father's or his own?
His own, driven mad by the murder his father had done.
Tiresias, Tiresias, how clearly you saw it all.
This is my news. You must draw what conclusions you can from it.
But look, Eurydice, our queen, has she overheard us?
I've heard something, friend. I heard a voice telling of some new sorrow, and I fainted there at the temple with all my maidens about me. But speak again. Whatever it is, I can bear it. Grief and I are no strangers.
Dearest lady, I will tell you plainly all that I have seen. I went with Creon to the outer plain, where Polynices was lying, no friend to pity him, his body shredded by dogs. We made our prayers in that place to Hecate and Pluto, that they would be merciful. And we bathed the corpse with holy water, and we brought fresh broken branches to burn what was left of it. And upon the urn we heaped up a towering barrow of the earth of his own land. When we were done, we ran to the vault where Antigone lay on her couch of stone. One of the servants had gone ahead, and while he was yet far off, he heard a voice grieving within the chamber. And he came back and told Creon. And as the king went closer, the air was full of wailing, the words lost. And he begged us to make all haste. Am I a prophet, he said, weeping? And must I walk this road, the saddest of all that I have gone before? My son's voice calls me on. Oh, quickly, quickly, look through the crevice there and tell me if it is Haemon or some deception of the gods. We obeyed, and in the cavern's farthest corner we saw her lying. She had made a noose of her fine linen veil and hanged herself. Haemon lay beside her, his arms about her waist, lamenting her. Her, his love, lost underground, crying out that his father had stolen her away from him. When Creon saw him, the tears rushed to his eyes, and he called to him, "What have you done, child? Speak to me." But Haemon spat in his face. He said not a word, but his eyes. And suddenly, he drew his sword and lunged. Creon shrank back, the blade missed, and the boy, desperate against himself, drove it half its length into his own side and fell. And as he died, he gathered Antigone close in his arms again, choking, his blood bright red on her white cheek. And now he lies dead with the dead, and she is his at last, his bride in the houses of the dead.
The queen has left us without a word. What can she mean?
It troubles me too. Yet she knows what is best. Her grief is too great for public lamentation, and doubtless she's gone to her chamber to weep for her dead son.
It may be so, but I fear this deep silence.
I will see what she's doing. I will go in.
here's the king himself. Oh, look at him. Bearing his own damnation in his arms.
Nothing you can say can touch me anymore. My own blind heart has brought me from darkness to final darkness. Here you see the father murdering the murdered son and all my civic wisdom. Haman, my son, so young to die. I was the fool, not you. And you died for me.
That is the truth. But you were late in learning it.
This truth is hard to bear. Surely a god has crushed me beneath the hugest weight of heaven and driven me headlong a barbaric way to trample out the thing I held most dear. The pains that men will take to come to pain.
The burden you carry in your hands is heavy, but it is not all. You will find more in your house.
What burden worse than this shall I find there?
The queen is dead.
Oh, port of death. Deaf world, is there no pity for me? Can it be true? Is my wife dead? Has death bred death?
You can see for yourself. Behold.
Oh, pity. All true, and more than I can bear. Oh, my wife, my son.
She stood before the altar, and her heart welcomed the knife in her own hand guided. And a great cry burst from her lips for Haman dead, her son. And her last breath was a curse for her husband. She fell. And the dark flowed in through her closing eyes.
Oh, God, I am sick with fear. Are there no swords here? Has no one a blow for me? I alone am guilty. I know it, and I say it. Lead me in quickly, friends. I have neither life nor substance. Lead me in.
You are right. If there can be right in so much wrong, the briefest way is best in a world of sorrow.
Let it come. Let death come quickly and be kind to me. I would not ever see the sun again.
All that will come when it will, but we meanwhile have much to do. Leave the future to itself.
All my prayer heart was in that prayer.
Then do not pray any more. The sky is death.
Lead me away. I have been rash and foolish. I have killed my son and my wife. I look for comfort. My comfort lies here, dead. Whatever my hands have touched has come to nothing. Fate has brought all my pride to a thought of dust.
There is no happiness where there is no wisdom. No wisdom but in submission to the gods. Big words are always punished. And proud men in old age learn to be wise.
You have just heard a new version of the Antigone of Sophocles by Dudley Fitz and Robert Fitzgerald. Those taking part in today's performance were Antigone, Ara Gerald, Ismene, Dorothy Darling, Eurydice, Cheery Hardy, Creon, Alfred Shirley, Haman, Raymond Edward Johnson, Tiresias, George Lassois, a sentry, Mark Smith, a messenger, Horace Braham, Coregus, William Shelley, the first choral voice, Dennis Hoey, the second choral voice, Burford Hampton, and the father, Harry Joyner. The play was arranged and directed by Charles Warburton, musical arrangements by Frank Black, and the orchestra was under the direction of Joseph Hunt. The Great Plays series is a public service feature of the National Broadcasting Company, and next week at this same hour, the Alcestes of Euripides will be presented. A study manual giving complete background material for the Great Plays by Blevins Davis, who arranged for the series, is available to our radio audience at the cost of 25 cents. Send coin or money orders to Columbia University Press, in care of Great Plays, Columbia University, New York.